What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to In Search Of. We're your host, Ashton and Sam. We're two accountants who binge podcasts by day and TV by night. Keep listening to find what you've been in search of.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, Ashton.
Just went right into it.
Yeah, this is really, I know yesterday we were like, long time no talk, but this really is long time no talk, like 24 hours.
Yeah, we talked literally yesterday, but we're recording again through, I guess, Zoom because it's snowing in Nashville, which the roads don't look too bad, but I don't know.
I went out because I'm waiting for something in the mail, and I went out to see those delivered yesterday. And like the roads were, well, I mean, roads, I didn't walk on the roads, but just
they don't
my mailbox and it was not slippery at all. It was just wet. So,
yeah. So we could have probably made it, but we're not going to risk it. So we're just going to make it easy on ourselves. Yep.
We're pouring a glass of wine.
Yes. We are. Yep. Exactly. So today we have bank robberies and we have a TV show called Evil Genius from Netflix. And then we've got, Sam is going to do Last Scene, which also has a Netflix show, but she'll talk more on that. And then I'm going to do a podcast called Hooked. And so everything is about theft and robbery. And so no killings, I guess, I don't think. And well, no, just kidding. Evil Genius.
Yeah.
Someone does die.
That is like enough violence for all of it because our podcasts aren't quite so violent, but
Evil Genius
is horrifying. So,
yeah. Okay. So we've got those three. So if you don't want any spoilers, stop here. But if you do, go listen to them, follow, subscribe, and let them know that we sent you. And then if you want, follow, subscribe us. I have to do the shameful plug every time because I feel like that's the only way we're gonna make this thing work. But okay, so Evil Genius. We were both talking about how we were trying to refresh our memory on this because we both watched it along, you know, I feel like I watched it closer to when it came out, which I think was 2018. So it's been a while. But you actually watched some of the episodes. What episodes did you rewatch?
I watched the first two today. And because I obviously I remembered the big thing that happened, which is the guy who walks into a bank with a bomb strapped around his neck and he gets pulled over, I think, or stopped, and he's taken out of his car and the police are swarming around him. And while the police are trying to figure out what's going on and get the bomb squad over to where they are, the bomb goes off.
Yes. And the pictures from that, like you can go and look at the pictures. It is the most surreal thing. I don't know. It is.
I know. I can't imagine being a police officer watching it happen, because they said they heard like the beeps. And they weren't really sure if he was serious about it being a real bomb, and they cut his shirt off with scissors, and they saw that it was, it looked like a bomb, but you know, they still don't know if it's real. It could have just been a fake that looked like one. But they heard the beeps, and the Netflix show plays the video of it. I mean, you don't see like the actual moment, but you know, he's talking to the police officers like, is anyone gonna try to get this off of me? And he's like, I'm not lying. And
I know, yeah, it's horrible. So the show is based around, like, they named it after the main woman. I can't remember her name.
Marjorie,
yeah, something like that. So she was, I think, like, very intelligent, and I think later, like, her brain, like, deteriorated, like she got like dementia or something, and like she's, you know, she wasn't this genius. She isn't the same genius today, but I think she was very intelligent. But I think, I'm trying to remember like the story. So I think her and another accomplice or whatever, like, he was a pizza delivery guy, so they like ordered pizza out to get delivered to them.
Yeah, and it was like this really remote like cell tower, so it wasn't a home where he had been sent to deliver the pizzas.
Yes. Yeah. And then that's when they like take him in and put the bomb on him. And then I guess he drives his car to the bank, right?
Like, yes, they send him off. They give him like these really like a 9-page letter to give to the bank.
Oh yeah.
But they give him a bunch of instructions, because the bomb that she created had 4 different locks, and she said you have to basically complete these 4 tests, and you'll get a lock like after every one that you complete. And so the big one was robbing the bank. So yes, he took like the clues or whatever you want to call them in his car, and he drove to the bank and was instructed to rob it. And the robbery, calling the police, was how the police found him.
And I know it said it's still like cold, like a cold case today. Is that not true? Like, when I was reading on,
I don't think so. She did it.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe, I don't know why, maybe I just misread something. 'Cause at first I was like, why is this a cold case? Like they have her like, and I think she's in jail, right?
Yeah. Because she also, so they started looking into her because she, her house was between, the man who was killed's home and where he was instructed to bring the pizza. And his ex, or I mean, her ex boyfriend called the cops and said, hey, she has a body in her freezer.
Oh yeah.
And she had killed her ex-boyfriend and like wrapped him up and put him in the freezer. And they were like, okay, so these two like crazy things happened in such like close proximity to each other, so they must be linked. So if she hasn't been like fully convicted of like the bombing thing, then she definitely is in jail for the killing and
the murder.
Yeah.
It's not long, isn't it? Like 4 parts on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I remember when it first came out, it is like, that one and another show kind of had, gave me the same vibes. What is it called? Like Murder Cats or Don't Kill Cats. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen
it. Don't F with Cats. Don't F with Cats. But yes, it's like the same kind of like setup where it's like a 4-part series. It's really short, and it just like, but it draws you in like so quick, and it's such, I don't know. It's just crazy stories. It's insane, but it's a good, I think it's a really good watch on Netflix. There's just some crazy people out there.
I know. That reminds me, I just watched, it's a new one, newer one on Netflix that I watched.
Ooh, something about killers or...
Yes.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles or the... Oh my gosh, I'm trying to find my... watch it again on Netflix because... Anyway, but it's about a serial killer in Los Angeles in like the maybe 70s, 80s, 70s.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember what it's called.
I know, it's like the...
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I get them all mixed up too. Like
crime scene, the Times Square killer. So it's not Los Angeles, it's New York.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that.
Killer. It is, it's only three parts, but it was really good.
Well, when we said that about Los Angeles, that made me think of that other murder, or not murder, but the, where the girl that on the hotel where they couldn't, yeah, what's that one called? this is us
Hotel
just talking.
Cecil or the Cecil Hotel.
Yeah, where they like, they thought someone had killed her, but based off the evidence, they think she was in a, like manic state and got into the water thing. And because there was like a whole long question about if she had like taken, if the lid was on or off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. We're going like on a whole long tangent here.
But I know. There's,
we have lots of recommendations for a good Netflix document series, I guess.
Yeah. I remember hearing that story on Crime Junkie first.
Yep. Same.
We're explaining the elevator video where she was like doing hand gestures, and I remember hearing it on Crime Junkie and trying to imagine what the hand gestures were when they were talking about it, and then the show came out and they play that elevator clip and it is bizarre. It's very eerie. But yeah
so we have a ton of Netflix recommendations and maybe we'll get through all of them on this podcast, but so yeah, back to the original one that we were talking about, Evil Genius. Yeah, it's really good. It's just so crazy watching the bomb on the guy.
Yeah, it makes you feel horrible. A little ill. Like I was watching it and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yes. It's crazy. But that's our recommendation for TV. So go check that out. But next, so you want to start with last scene.
Yes. So I listened to this when it first came out. It came out in 2018 and it was put out by WBUR, which is Boston News. And I really liked it when it first came out because, again, it's something different and nonviolent. And it's just, it makes you really curious. So it was just something different to what I usually listen to. And now, so since that the podcast came out, there's been a Netflix special, and I think the Netflix special came out last year. And
yeah, it's pretty recent.
Yes. And so I watched that right away, and between the two, I like the Netflix special more than I like the podcast, because I think seeing the museum, so this happens in a museum, and having some visual kind of helps you put it together in a way that's harder to do when you're just listening to the podcast.
Yeah. But, yeah. And I actually watched the Netflix show today. So I hadn't listened to the podcast, but I wanted to know like what you were going to be talking about. So I started it and it was so, so good. I literally watched it all today. It's another like little, like, I don't know how many, four or five parts. It's so good, but yeah, I'll let you do the talking.
Yes. So this is the story of the largest art heist in history, and it happened now 32 years ago and it's still unsolved. So the morning after St. Patrick's Day, so it was like 1 a.m. after St. Patrick's Day in 1990, two thieves stole 13 artworks that were valued at $500 million from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. And so what had happened was two men who were disguised as police officers were buzzed in by the security guard who was working at the museum that night. And apparently they said that there was some disturbance that they were responding to. And the security guard who let him in, his name was Rick Abbott, and I'll talk about him a little bit. But they tied him and the other guard who was working, his name was Randy, tied him up and led him down to the basement of the museum. And if you watch the Netflix show or if you go online, I really like the website for this. There's like a 6-minute YouTube video that I think is really helpful to watch if you don't want to watch the whole Netflix thing. And there's some images that I think are helpful, but they like duct tape their faces in like a really bizarre like manner.
Well, and wasn't it were they both duct taped that way, or was it only Rick that was, because they
it
never
was just
had
Rick.
Okay, yes. Yeah, and which was, is even kind of weird, but
yeah, like why would you let one see everything and not the other?
Yeah, so like Rick had, instead of just like tape over his eyes, they put the tape over his eyes, but then they also did the tape like around the top of his head and then down like under his chin. So it
yeah,
didn't
like,
make
if
any
you imagine,
sense.
Like, if you got your tonsils out or your mm-hmm. wisdom teeth out and you have like something strapped around your head to like keep ice packs on your teeth, like it was done that way.
So, also, like, he had a ton of hair and I just yeah. thought to myself, like, oh my God, that had to have hurt so bad when they pulled that tape off.
Ripping that off.
Which was oh just gosh, like pulling yeah. like a Band-Aid off your arm, like the hair on your arm. I just was yes. thinking to myself, like, holy crap, that
he
had
to have like,
hurt
cut
so
that off, probably.
Yeah, probably just got like his haircut, like a head yeah, shaved. Yeah.
So they led them into the basement, taped up Rick, and then they spent 81 minutes robbing the museum, which, I mean, if you're going to do this high profile crime, you're going to be like in and out. You're not going to
yeah.
be taking your time. And some of the works that they stole, they like very carefully like took off the wall and like took out of the frame and were like very careful, which again, you're running in, grabbing things and like running out. If
but
you,
some
if
stuff
you think,
too. Yeah. But some sorry. Stuff too, they like cut, they like, instead of taking yeah. out the frame, yes. they like cut it out with a knife. And people were like, if you're collecting art, like you're going to cut yeah. it. But then some things they like unscrewed, like they took like a eagle sculpture on top mm-hmm. of a, I don't know what it was, but they like unscrewed, you know, so it was weird because there were some things that they like, you know, yes. took the time. And then like these artworks of like, you know, since the 1600s, they just were like, like cutting
yes,
out.
They said in the podcast that it almost seemed like two separate crimes because it was like mm-hmm. two different MOs, and like the way some pieces were taken was so different from others. And it also, they didn't take the most expensive pieces, like they
no.
did buy some of the most expensive.
They were very clients. Specific with like the things they took.
Yeah,
and some things didn't even have like that they weren't even worth like that much.
Right. They were just yeah. like kind of things that this museum had, not as like decor, but they were just kind of like these extra pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the first person they looked at was Rick, cause he was the one who was there. He's the one who let the guys in. And, in the podcast, they say that 80% of museum robberies are from the employee. They're an mm-hmm. inside job. And Abbott was not who you would expect to be a security guard. So like, even mm-mm. if you don't watch anything, you should look up a picture of him because he's like a hippie. He's got like long curly hair. He was in like, I think he had like a cowboy hat or something.
He was in a band.
Yes. And he
did like, a lot of drugs.
Yes. So yeah. He had also given his 2 weeks notice right before this happened. And like the most suspicious thing he did was 20 minutes before the police showed up, he opened and closed the same door that led outside to the museum. And
I was confused by that. So by him yeah. doing that, did that like unlock the door?
No. So okay. what was kind of suspicious about that was the police thought that maybe that was his signal to the two guys that, like, hey, coast is clear, everyone's gone. Oh, like, this is my signal to you. And they were
got it. Okay.
That door. Okay. And he said, no, that was something I typically did every night to test the alarms and make sure, like, everything was working. And so they're like, well, if that was true, then we can go back and review, like, the security activity from previous nights. And the night before, he did open and close that door, but it was to let someone in. Yeah. And so then that became suspicious in and of itself that he let someone in, like, after hours, because he only worked, like, in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So he let someone in after hours. And it turns out that it was his boss, that he let in, but it was still against protocol to let anyone in after hours, even if it were his boss. So they think it was an inside job because of how long they took in the museum. Like, they knew that police weren't coming after them. They also kind of knew their way around the museum in a way that, like, only they would, and the public didn't have access to the places that, like, they took them to the basement, which the public didn't know where the basement
they
was.
They also knew where, like, a secret door was, too.
Yes.
Yeah, like, that. They were like, how did y'all know that there was a door here?
Yes, and they led Rick away from, there was one panic button in the museum that they knew to lead him away from, and they also knew, like, where the security office was. And there were motion sensors throughout the museum. So the museum had multiple floors. And so what I think is really helpful to watch, at least the YouTube video on their site, is they have, like, a time lapse and, like, what motion sensors went off in which rooms. Because in the second floor, the motion sensors went off, like, hundreds of times. So they were going back and forth between different rooms. But on the first floor, a motion sensor didn't go off once, and stuff was taken from the first floor. And later, the police tried to, like, recreate that, and they, so, like, one guy took one of those, like, infrared blanket things to kind of, like, disrupt his body heat from activating the sensors. A motion sensor,
uh-huh.
And he couldn't do it. So it's, like, next to impossible to prevent those from going off if you're moving around. And so there was stuff taken, but the only motion and footprints that they could capture was Rick's from earlier.
And it was, and yeah, and it was before, it was like 12:30 PM. So it was, like, before the robbers had entered the building. And they also found, that frame was in the like, yeah, the security guard seat. Guard so it's seat. Really, which I have a question too. So, like, yeah. Randy, the other mm-hmm. security guard, they never talked about him. So I always wondered, like, if they ever interviewed him and ever thought, like, do you think Rick was in on it? Because, like, he was the only other.
Yeah.
At least in the Netflix show, they didn't ever talk on Randy.
Yeah, so he never gave his last name, but there is one suspect that I'll talk about that he said he was 90 to 95% sure that this suspect was the guy who handcuffed him.
Okay.
So that, I mean, and that could be, he could still think Rick had something to do with it and hired these two guys, but he just, like, kind of pointed out who he thought the actual robber was. So, but Rick was never charged with anything, and he still says, it's kind of weird. He says, like, to this day, he's like, I'm the only one who's not concerned about solving it. And he's like, I'm just glad I survived it. Like, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
He has a weird attitude, but he seemed like a weird kind of character anyway.
Yeah.
So the other theories that the podcast talks about, a lot of them are centered around the Boston, like, mob scene. So there was an auto shop called TRC Auto Electric that was 4 miles from the museum, and it was run by Carmelo Merlino, and it was a front for cocaine trafficking. And he made claims, like, throughout his life of crime, of knowing where the paintings were, but he died in jail without really giving anything worthwhile. And each of the the episodes of the podcast kind of go into each one of these suspects, and I'm not going to go into as much detail about them, but
it's also helpful too, because on the Netflix show they do like a family tree of the suspects. Yes. So it kind of helps you visualize it a little better. Mm-hmm. Because it is a lot of people involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there were associates of Merlino. They point out in the podcast, David Turner, he had committed robberies which were similar to the Gardner heist. And one thing that was suspicious was he kind of suddenly and randomly had his sentence cut down by several years. And usually that only happens is if you're cooperating with the police and like have a deal mm-hmm. with information.
Yeah, but they didn't like make it public on what right. was, yeah, it's like private.
Yes. And he had an alibi because he had receipts the days before and the days after the robbery that had him in different locations, but none of the night of the robbery. But before, the couple days before, he spent like $600 and something at a spy supply store. So I mean,
it also sense. One note too that I thought was pretty interesting was, so like if you're looking at the family tree, there's like the mm-hmm. main guy who died in jail mm-hmm. and then like the two guys underneath him. So it's like if you had the main guy at the top, there's two guys under him, and then there's like the five underneath, and David Turner's like in that group. Well, mm-hmm. the guys in the middle, there was one, he was murdered, but there was like a rumor or like a statement made that he had had two Boston police uniforms like in a bag. Like someone noted seeing him with the two. So they were like, okay, why does this mob guy have two Boston mm-hmm. police uniforms in his bag? Which I thought that was like pretty convincing, because you know there's like all these theories and rumors. Yeah. But it's like yeah. I was like, dang, that's pretty convincing.
Yeah. And so David Turner and his other associate, George Reisfelder, I think that's how you pronounce
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another theory is that he was going to use the stolen paintings as what they call crime insurance to kind of get out of the gang and like buy his way out. Mm-hmm. And people who were close to him say that he looked like the police sketches that were put out of one. And that George told them that Merlino was like a watch guy on the outside while this was happening. But again, like this is all, like it's a lot of people taking credit for it because these mob guys want to be like known for pulling off this like crazy crime.
Yeah, and a lot of them, literally like David Turner is like the only one still left alive. Like they're yes. all like dead. Like either murdered yeah. or died of like, I guess, quote unquote, natural causes.
Yeah. And the FBI have said that they think both of the robbers are dead. So in 2013, like it was really the big announcement, only big announcement that the FBI had made on the case. And what they said was they believe that the art traveled to Connecticut and then to Philadelphia. But after Philadelphia, they don't know what happened to it. And the reason that they think all this is because what the podcast calls the two Bobbies. So it's Bobby Guarenti and his friend, Bobby Gentile.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so.
And so Bobby Guarenti's widow told the police that Bobby had the paintings but gave them to the second Bobby, his friend. Mm-hmm. And the police ended up searching the second Bobby's home, and they found like a whole bunch of illegal stuff but no paintings.
Art. Yeah.
Yeah, no art. So that kind of came and went, and the next thing podcast focus on is FBI agent Bob Whitman. He specialized in property theft and eventually ended up kind of running a branch of the FBI called the Art Crime Team. And he believed that he got as close as anyone has ever gotten to recovering any of the art. So he began working undercover with French gangsters that were tied to a Corsican gang that claimed to have two of the paintings, the Vermeer and the Rembrandt, I think. And he was working with these two, and they were going to go and try to buy, they were going to pay, I think, like $30 million for these two paintings. And there were like a couple hiccups in it. And eventually, just kind of randomly, his supervisor, the Boston supervisor, because Boston was still overseeing this heist, it was still like technically theirs, they just called it off. So he believed he got like really close, and if he had been allowed to like go through with it, he would have recovered them. So he got close, but nothing. And then the next two suspects are Miles Connor Jr. and Bobby Donati. And Connor has been called the world's greatest art thief. And he could have been the mastermind of it, but he was in prison at the time. So they think he directed Donati and another friend.
Wasn't Donati also like involved in that same mob group?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is so interesting.
And Connor claimed that he and Donati like cased the museum prior to the art heist. And kind of going back to what you said about how that the one eagle thing, and there was like a Chinese like relic
vase
that was stolen.
Thing, yeah.
Yes, that had some kind of personal ties to them. So like that kind of explains how random some of the items that were stolen, why they were taken.
Uh-huh.
But again, I mean, they've not been able to prove any of this. It's still unsolved.
Yeah, like I remember when on the FBI thing, when they like announced that they were like, we think we know who did it, but they still don't have any art. But then, and they also won't say who they think it is. So everybody's yeah, just so, like, well, no one cares if you can't.
Yeah, they're like, okay, yeah, right. I mean, great that you say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, good
but
for
it
you.
Really means nothing. Yeah, exactly. And so the final suspect is Brian McDevitt. He attempted to rob a similar museum, the Hyde Museum, and he is the one that Randy said he's 90-95% sure that he was the guy who handcuffed him. And so the FBI have said that they are nearly certain that the two robbers are dead, but that some people think that Brian McDevitt is dead and some people think he's alive.
So who is Brian? I don't remember much about him. Like who?
He's the focus of the last, the second to last, I guess, episode of the show. And mm-hmm. he had attempted to rob the Hyde Museum, which I think was not far from this museum. And mm-hmm. had like a similar MO, and his like ex-girlfriend, or I don't know if mm-hmm. they were married, suspected him, but I think he said that he had cancer and died from cancer in like Cuba or something. He like fled. So he kind of went missing, and some people think he's dead and some people think he just faked his death. But yeah, I mean, all of these are just leads and like weird coincidences. And I mean, so much of this circles around the mm-hmm. mob scene. And I mean, we know that, you know, they talk in like code and like very hushed things, and they like brag about things, but you know, you never know. So yeah, I really liked the podcast when it first came out. I would say if you were not wanting to do both the podcast and the show, I would watch the show on Netflix. I think it's really good, and it's different because it's not violent. It's just very like how could for 32 years not a single one of these be found.
Oh yeah, and I definitely think Rick was in on it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think he just was threatened, and they were like, you're going to go in on this with us, and you're never going to speak about it, or you're going to die, like, if you speak about it. So, like, yeah, I don't think
he was like, oh, I have this great plan. I'm going to get some people to rob.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that he knew about it.
Yes, he was in on it. And, no, the show, the Netflix show was great. I loved it. I also read about the, like, backstory of the woman who, Isabel Gardner. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, so cool how she came from money back in the 1800s and just like started collecting art, mm-hmm. and built this like 4-story building. And before there was anything in Boston, and just like collected things over time. And she actually lived in it and then died, in like 1919, I think. But I loved it. Just, I love like museums and stuff. And so I just think, mm-hmm. it was so interesting. I have Henry Matisse. She had some of his stuff. I have like fake prints of his in my kitchen. So everything.
Gotta I love from, Etsy.
Yeah, exactly. Etsy. Etsy's where it's at. If you want some like famous art, that's not real.
It's on the cheap.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I just thought it was so interesting from like the backstory of her building this place.
Yeah. Oh, and the then also does have an episode about her.
Really? Yeah. Also, I remember them talking about where they thought some of the artwork had been taken. It was when the journalist like met up with this one guy and he like showed him a print, but he didn't know if it was like real or not, because it could, mm-hmm. be fake. And then they studied the like paint chips.
Yeah.
I don't think he was like a main suspect, but that happened in Red Hook, New York. And I just thought it was funny because Jake and I, when we went to New York a couple of years ago, we stayed in Red Hook.
Oh, really?
And yeah, like in just like an Airbnb. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I could so imagine all the places that they were describing, because it's very like an industrial looking place. And mm-hmm. they said like it was in a storage unit. But yeah, it's a great, great show. Like I literally watched all of it just like this morning, like back to back to back. But
yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. Great, and great story, and just so crazy that they haven't found anything. And I thought it was interesting too, like, because obviously you can't sell it, because if you sell it, like you're
like, hello, caught. Red flag.
Yeah, so they use it as like collateral. You know, they use it, like they take it, and then they're like, okay, we could use this as collateral, like if someone spends time in prison and they want a way out. But mm-hmm. you know, people, like some of those people that were suspects had spent time in prison and it never came up. So
yeah, they were talking about Carmelo Molino, and they were like, mm-hmm. well, maybe he just hated the FBI more than he hated the thought of dying in prison.
Yeah.
Because they were like, he could have done well for his family, you know, if he exchanged for that.
Yeah, because I think the price now is $10 million, and they stole like $200 million worth of mm-hmm. stuff. But yeah, A+ on that story. It was so good. So I'm going to do the story. It's called Hooked. It's just a podcast. It's by Apple TV, but it's in like Apple TV worked with Campside Media, I believe is what it's called. And so that's the network who had the show. The host is Josh Dean, and Josh Dean is also the host of The Clearing, which is a podcast. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a good one. And he's also the host of, I think, the second season of Chameleon, which, yes. Yeah. So I really like him. He's he just does a good job, and he's done some really good stories. I really liked The Chameleon and The Clearing, but The Chameleon was really good. So, and it's also kind of cool because he's just a journalist who like builds like relationships. Like he actually like becomes friends with the guy in the story. And I just think it just takes like your, like the level of journalism to a whole new level. I just respect it a lot. I just think it's cool. So anyways, the guy in the story is Tony Hathaway, and he was, technically like caught in 2014, but the story kind of takes place like over the years. And his crime was bank robberies. But Tony Hathaway is a very interesting person. Like, I don't really look at him as a bad guy. Like, you it's hard to look at him as a bad guy because you get to know him through the stories. And you'll understand why as we talk more about it. But he was a design engineer for Boeing. He was married with two kids, like, very smart. I don't even think he went to college, but he just had a friend. Like, his dad's friend, like, knew how talented he was and got him a job, and he just worked his way up at Boeing. So he had gotten injured while working at Boeing. Like, they were just after work playing a game. So I don't even remember what game, some game outside, and he fell and hurt his back, I think. So he was prescribed painkillers, and this is kind of like when the story starts, and like, you see it all goes downhill from here or from there. So Tony had struggled with addiction before. Like, I think he had had an alcohol addiction, and he was sober at the time. I think he maybe even went to rehab for alcohol. But another thing I kind of want to point out that I think is so interesting is like, painkillers and opioids. Like, I think being an alcoholic or just any kind of addiction, I think is like, you know, it's hereditary, or it runs, like, there's a, I don't know all the medical terms, but it's like a genetic makeup in some way or form. Yeah. But like, painkillers are so strong that I don't even think, like, from what I've read online, that like, you need to have that pre-existing addiction. Like, you can get hooked on them. Like,
I know I will not shut up about this, but you have to watch Dope Sick.
Yeah.
Because it is so good. And it really makes you understand how people get addicted. Because, like, you said, you don't have to have an addictive personality.
Yes. Yeah.
And this to happen.
And like, for some like me, you know, I'm very blessed to not have addictive personalities. I mean, I think like the worst thing I'm addicted to is like Coke Zero or maybe some coffee, you know, like,
yeah.
So, and I'm very lucky for that. And it's so interesting to me to like get in the mind of these people who are addicted, but also like, you don't even have to have an addiction problem to get addicted to painkillers. So, so anyways, so he got his back injury, started taking it for the pain, and then one thing led to another, and he's addicted. So for a long time, he managed his addiction. He basically kind of led like a double life, and he kept his job, but was basically like high all the time. So eventually him and his wife separate. They have a good relationship. She's still like, you know, she cares for him and loves him, but he wasn't the same person like during, obviously, his addiction. So he takes a leave from work to try and actually manage his addiction. And I think during this time, like, Boeing was still paying him, but it never like got better. I mean, he was still like using all of the time. So one day, which this is kind of where the story takes like a crazy, crazy turn, he catches his son was like 16, doing heroin in his room, and not reacting like the normal dad would, which I'm like, oh my God, if I was doing heroin in my room and my dad walked in, like, my life would be over. But your dad is addicted to painkillers, and so he sees this, and so I think Connor, I think is his name, you know, he's like, oh my God, what is my dad about to do? Well, he's like, what is that? And he's like, it's heroin. And one thing leads to another, and Tony gets addicted to heroin because he's like, okay, I'm getting the same high, and it's a lot cheaper than the Oxycontin. So Tony and his son Connor begin like doing drugs all the time, like sundown to sun or sun up to sundown. Like, it just goes rampant at this point. And what's so mind blowing to me is that Tony was still getting paid by Boeing, and they were so poor. Like, they were living out of their car because they were spending all of their money on heroin. Like, they barely had enough money to get a pack of cigarettes. And it's just so mind blowing that problem could get so bad that your son, you and your son are like, it's just so hard to wrap your head around. I mean, from, and it's the getting that poor to doing it with your son
there's just so many levels that it's just so hard, but like addiction, I guess, can do that to you.
Yeah. So this is the last thing I'll quote from Dope Sick.
No, you're fine.
No, they explain that, because like Dope Sick is actually the term that between like hits, and like it can feel like you are literally going to die.
Yeah.
If you don't get that next thing. So like they are literally living like hit to hit, mm-hmm. and they will forego everything else, and they'll ruin everything else for it, because they feel like they must have it to live.
Yeah. So to add to our list of like Netflix documentaries to watch, Dope Sick is another one.
You'll have to like watch it and come back.
Yes, we have a million of them. During their despair, they decide to rob a bank, and it goes poorly. They get caught, and his son, because his son was the actual one who like went into the bank and robbed the bank. So he gets caught, and the dad never like speaks up or anything, which he explains like their reasoning for the way they handled that, which, you know, whatever. That's a small detail in the grand scheme of things. But so his son goes to jail. And at this point, Tony like loses his job. They're like, okay, you know, we're done. This is clearly not getting better. So then that paycheck is no longer coming in. Tony and his mom move in together. And this is when Tony begins robbing banks. And so Tony, he's a very, very smart guy. You learn that. Like and Connor, his son, is very smart. Like they're very smart. They just got down the wrong path in life. But Tony starts robbing banks, and he's good at it. Like he's really, really good at it. He had a method. He never carried a gun. He would change up his like mask to the point where they thought it was like different robbers. Like they didn't know it was the same person. He would like sit outside the bank and wait till no one was there. He would do like smaller banks, and he would, you know, go, and like he would do it really fast too. Like he'd go in, and they also, they got caught with his son because they didn't check for like the powder or whatever. So the powder went off, and it was like just a disaster. But Tony like learned lessons, I guess, from that first time.
Didn't he say that he used to like use his finger
and
make it look like a gun in his
sweatshirt
or whatever?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm like impersonating. Like, you don't know what I'm talking about. But yes. But anyway, so he like would also practice in his mom's kitchen. Like he would like set the timer.
The microwave. Yes.
Yes. And he would go around. So he was clearly good at it, because he ended up doing like 30 bank robberies. So, and he also didn't take a ton of money too. He just took enough money to like beat his addiction. And then he also like got addicted to robbing banks. So like that is in you, you know, like it can just, mm-hmm. it can come out in any form. It's just crazy. So he gets caught on his 30th robbery. And I think at this point too, he was watching a bank, this one bank, and he, like, no one was leaving, you know, it wasn't working out. So he got lazy, and he went in, and it didn't go as planned. He also one time robbed a bank where his sister worked. And I think that might've been, it was like the second to last time he like robbed a bank where his sister worked. It was insane. He also like took her car. Like borrowed her car and went and robbed her. But it's just you can tell his mind, like he was not obviously not his right mind. So he gets caught. They go into the detail of him in jail, and he eventually gets sober because, you know, he's in jail. He ended up not getting as much time as like they were trying to put on him. But I think something went wrong with, the interview, and so they use that against the like prosecutor's team, and so he ended up not getting that much time. So he got like 3 to 5 years, I think. And so he's out of prison like by the time this podcast is being like, you know, produced. And so him and his son both eventually got clean. It took his son a little longer. His son kind of had some up and downs, but him and his son like live in an apartment together, which
a lot of people, like the mom, wasn't totally happy about, because, you know, you're not, when you're in a recovery, you know, you're not supposed to be with like other people in recovery. So I think that's somewhat of a struggle, but they like have such a tight bond that they're not gonna separate. So they live in an apartment together. This is around the pandemic, when the pandemic hits. And so it's kind of interesting because you can hear Josh like figure out, like he didn't know what was happening, but like as he's talking with Tony, he starts to learn that Tony and his son like start struggling with an alcohol addiction. So that's kind of sad, but they did eventually like get sober. But basically, like the reason why Tony did this story with Josh was because he said, you know, a lot of people had approached him to do a story on him, but they were all concerned about the bank robberies, which that is like exciting and thrilling to hear about how someone can do that many times. But basically Tony's mission and the reason why he chose Josh was because he wants to get like the message out there about like what OxyContin and like painkillers can do to people and what it can do to their families. And so at the end, he, and it was also really interesting to hear Josh like interviewed some of the bank tellers that had been robbed when he did, and had, like, you know, obviously they're terrified. And so Tony later throughout the podcast, like heard their side of the story. And it's just so interesting to get to hear him like hear that and realize, cause he kept thinking, oh, I'm not hurting anybody. Like I'm robbing from a bank. Like I'm not robbing from the small, like the little people. You know, I'm doing it from the big banks. And so you can tell, like, he's like, okay, I messed up, which, yeah, he messed up. But in his mind, he was thinking he wasn't hurting anybody because he didn't have a gun or anything like that. But obviously, that's a traumatizing experience. And so it was just interesting to get to hear their side of the story and hear him kind of come around, like, oh, yeah, that was horrible. So they end the podcast on Purdue Pharma and just like Tony's mission to just, you know, do whatever he can to take these people down, which there's a lot of people in Tony's shoes who are like, okay, these are horrible people. So none of them, like the family is the Sackler family. So what they were trying to do was they were trying to like claim like bankruptcy. So they like no one could file like a lawsuit against them and they wouldn't have to pay out any money. And so there was a big court ruling like it was in September of 2021. And so they didn't allow them to do that. Like people came up and spoke up and was like, no, like you cannot let these people like get away with this again, because they haven't served any time, they really haven't taken any responsibility, like they, it just, like they had doctors, which I mean that's, the doctors were just as bad as them, but they had doctors like selling this stuff, like it was like, if you watch another show too, is The Pharmacist, which I talked about yesterday, where they talk about how like the doctors were getting in on it, and like that's who was like giving Tony like all his medicine, where they were like getting in with the pharmaceutical reps. And like, it was just this whole big scheme because everybody was just making so much money off of it.
Yeah. So, that is the story of Dope Sick. It's about Purdue Pharma and how they had their reps go to doctors and sell it as like the best pain medicine there is. And so doctors are like, yeah, I'll do anything to help my patients. Here, take this. This is what they're telling me. And it surrounds the case against Purdue Pharma and the people that are affected and all that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So they were not able to claim that bankruptcy immunity deal or whatever. So they had to pay out like $4.3 billion, but none of that money is going to like any of the people. It's going to treatment and prevention programs, which I do understand like that is needed, but also like they're still prescribing painkillers and like, yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's crazy. And they have like 11 billion net worth, so like that was probably like nothing to them, like,
yeah,
you know. And so Purdue Pharma will be like dissolved, like they're not going to be around anymore, but like I said, like painkillers are still like on the market and still going to be prescribed. But it was just a very interesting story. And I mean, it's a good story because you hear like how he does these bank robberies, which, yes, that's the crazy, like, thrilling part, but also it's so informative on the OxyContin side and, you know, like how someone like that who had everything, like he was an engineer for Boeing. He traveled the world. He, you know, was married. He had his kids and like, they had this like perfect life. He had like, he was sober. Like he was like doing nothing. And then he has a back injury and is taking what the doctor is prescribing him. And then his whole life is just, you know, taking this terrible different path. So yes, it's a great, great story. And it was a good, entertaining story, but it was also very informative. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Because we hear all these crime stories and we can't imagine anyone doing that thing. And it sounds so crazy and such horrible people. And then you hear a story like him and you're like, I mean, that sounds like anyone I know, you know, he's holding a steady job. He has a good family. You know, he's doing okay. And you're like, it can take
how did that happen down to someone?
Yeah.
So, so I think that was your two great stories and two good podcasts, that if you're not into the true crime, like we are, where it gets dark. These don't get too dark and they're very, very interesting and, entertaining stories. So that's all we got for that. Our last thing we were going to talk about was, I was telling Sam, I just started a book called Anxious People, which she was saying she just finished, which is actually also about a bank robbery. Yeah. So like, I'm to the point, I just started it, but like, the guy like robs the bank, he goes into the apartment building, and they're like interviewing all the people from the apartment building. And I'm a little confused because, oh, like it looks like he shot himself or he's like dead, but he's not in the building. I don't know.
There's a bank robber and the robber ends up in an apartment that's being shown for like sale.
Yes. Yes.
And so the police who are reacting to this bank robbery think that the bank robber is taking these people hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go up and everyone is gone. But so it's not what you think.
Okay.
And you don't really realize until like the last couple of pages, but it's a very good book and it's not about a bank robbery like whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of like little life pieces of wisdom and it's a nice story in the end. But yeah,
I'm excited. I want to read it, like pick it back up tonight. But yeah. I was also telling Sam that I think there is a show, like I think there's a TV show on it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the book. I want to watch it. And Jake was like, don't watch it. Read your book first. And I was like, okay, fine.
What is it on?
I can't remember which one it's on. I think Netflix. No, I feel like not Netflix. Maybe Apple TV. I can't remember. Sam is looking it up right now. She'll tell us.
Oh, yeah. It is on Netflix.
Okay.
You have to read. You need to finish the book first.
Yeah, I am.
Because if you know a certain fact from the beginning, then it will change everything. And okay, I think they would have to show that fact. Unless they work backwards. I don't know.
So. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm gonna finish. I'm gonna pick it back up tonight. But yeah, so if you need, you know, going on the same topic of
robberies, if you're interested in this topic, there is also a book. We've got TV, we've got podcasts, we've got books, we've got books that were turned into TV shows.
The only thing we don't have is a movie, which we could probably think of, but we don't like those.
Yeah, no, I don't have any movies off the top of my head. I enjoyed this podcast. It wasn't also the stories were a lot easier to tell than some of the true crime ones, where it's like you have to go into a lot of detail. And you kind of have to explain why one person wasn't a suspect or why they it's some good stuff, but that's all we got, I think, for today. So okay, well, bye Sam.
Bye Ashton.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.